Welcome to the Pop Culture Pub Podcast. Now let's begin.
I hurt myself today to see if I still feel. I focus on the pain, the only thing that's real. The needle tears a hole.
Well, hello, fellow podcast listener, and welcome to the Pop Culture Pub Podcast. It is the year 2021, and we are back after a brief hiatus for the holiday season, or using air quotes, the holiday season, as we were talking just prior to this recording. Didn't really feel holiday-ish with all the restrictions and so forth. But we're here. We're back. It's January 2021. Hopefully this year will be better. And I am not alone. First up, I have my co-host in crime, Mr. Kevin Decent. How's it going, Kevin?
It's going all right, Chris. You know, we were talking a little bit before the show and your opening here. We're all hoping 2021 is better, and so far it's not going well. My guess is that January counts as fiscal year for 2020. Mm-hmm. Like when companies bury January because it's a slow month in with the December receipts, and then February stuff will really start kicking into high gear and it'll be better.
Yeah, I'm hopeful. And we are not alone. That the voice you hear is Ragnar. How's it going, Ragnar?
Oh, good. Hello, everyone.
Okay, so go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, yeah, you guys are right. 2021 is not off to a good start so far, that's for sure.
No, it is not. So a couple things before we get started in tonight's topic. First off, we were having some issues with our Skype, so I apologize. If we run into some technical difficulties running forward, you know, we'll do the best we can with this episode. Second of all, on our last episode, the Chris Locker Christmas special, I had mentioned that our next episode was we were going to be talking about breakfast cereals. That'll be the next episode after this one, because I completely forgot that we were going to do the best of 2020. And I think the reason why I forgot about it is because 2020 kind of sucked. So it's hard to it was hard to come up with a best of list for some things, but we're gonna do our best here. So a couple things also. I just wanted to give a big shout out and thank you to Richard Reeder, a friend of the podcast. One of my co-podcasters from the Geek Fallout days. He was nice enough to find a Star Trek Unification, Star Trek Next Generation Unification plate, and he mailed it to me, and I opened it the other day. It was a surprise Christmas present from him. So happy, and I opened it up. I realized what it was because I recognized the foam packaging it comes in. But unfortunately, it got broken in transit, probably from a Canada Post employee that, you know, mistaken it for a football, maybe. I don't know. So I just want to say thank you, Richard. It was wonderful. I'm going to do my best to glue it. It would have been awesome if it had not been wrecked by Canada Post. But
I didn't realize it was a unification plate, ironically.
Yeah. Yes. And last but not least, I did mention on the last episode that I was going to buy a drinking horn mug from Ragnar, and I did get it. Because I was away at work during Christmas time. I didn't actually open it till after Christmas, and it was awesome. And I also bought a Mjolnir necklace from Ragnar, which I got this week, which is also awesome. So thanks again, Ragnar.
Thank you.
That was some good stuff, and yeah, like I encourage everyone to go check out Ragnar's website, because the drinking horn mug is awesome. Like, I can't say enough great things about it.
Oh, well, I'm glad to hear, man.
But, all right, well, so, for this episode, we're talking the best of 2020. So, like I said, despite what I said on the Christmas episode, the first episode of 2021, we are talking about the best of 2020. And we have a category, a number of categories, and so we're going to pick one thing for sure for each category, and then honorable mentions after that. So the first up on our list of categories is best comic book. A caveat for this, it doesn't necessarily have to be made in 2020, but something you've read in 2020. And the reason why I say that is because the comic book industry did shut down during the first round of lockdowns in 2020. So, you know, if you didn't catch something brand new or whatever, that's fine. So the best comic of 2020. Ragnar, we'll start with you. What is on your list, sir?
Well, I hate to admit it, but I don't actually read comics, so have to take a pass on this one.
Not a problem. I got a bunch I'll say in your honor, sir. Kevin.
All right.
Kevin, first on your, or what's on your list, sir?
Okay. So for a lot of this stuff, like you're saying, comics at least got back on track, but like when we get to movies and certain things, a lot of stuff didn't come out. Like, we don't have much to choose from, and even if we did, we couldn't go out anywhere, we couldn't go places.
Mm-hmm.
I was furloughed for like near 6 months, and I couldn't get through stuff because I'm just sitting at home like, all right, now what the hell do I do? And it's not an enjoyable time to, you know, read and watch things and all, because you're just waiting for the other shoe to drop.
Yep.
So I don't think it's going to be as comprehensive a list as it is in other years. I'm already ahead, I feel, for 2021 for stuff I'm getting through. But one of my favorite things I read this year is called Sweetheart. It's from Action Lab Comics. So in this small town, certain people in the town, a monster will attach itself to them. It's like it claims you. And eventually this monster is going to kill you and eat you. Because they like the glucose that humans produce. That's like their sugar. And it could get you today, could get you tomorrow, could get you 20 years from now, 60 years from now. Don't know when it'll happen. But it stays attached to you your entire life. You will never get away from this. And people in the town, they can take a medicine, so the monsters don't like the medicine. They won't eat you if the medicine is in your system, so it tries to keep it at bay. And some of it's generational. Sometimes it comes out of nowhere. You don't know. And it's a town living with this. And it clicked with me, end of issue one, start issue two. It was a 5-issue series. I go, holy crap, it's cancer.
Mm.
This whole story is an allegory for it.
Cool.
For diseases that can just come out of nowhere, follow you all your life. You can take medication, you can try to keep it at bay, but it could be tomorrow, it could be decades from now, but eventually it's going to get you. And I was like, holy shit, this is good.
Wow. Well, that sounds really good.
It was. It was intense. It was well drawn. It's marketed as a horror. I was like, geez, as soon as you realize what they're doing here, like, yeah, it still works as a horror, but it also just works as, you know, any human can, you know, if you haven't gone through it yourself, someone you love has gone through it, and you can relate to every bit of the story. That was a recent read, but man, it was good.
And what was that called again, Kevin?
Sweetheart.
Sweetheart. Okay, I'm going to check that out. Sounds awesome. Did you have any honorable mentions, Kev?
Oh, I'm going to save my best new one because we're doing that. I really liked, there's another book I read this year called Villain Seeking Hero. It is, all of villainy is done like a company. You have to be assigned a hero and you have to be assigned a team. And, you know, there's all sorts of, there's union deals. You can't be in the middle of someone else's thing there. and this like D-list villain accidentally takes out an A-list hero and upsets all of it. It's like, you weren't supposed to do that. Why were you even fighting him? You're in two different categories here. And he throws off like the corporation aspect of superhero and supervillainy by doing so. And he's like, I don't care. Yeah. But he's thrown off the whole business of it all. But it was fun. I got going back and forth with the creator. He had to leave the company that was publishing it and now is doing it self-published. I was like, oh, let me know. Like, it was just such a great idea. And he kept world building for it, too. Mm-hmm. Immortal Hulk has been very good this year.
Yep.
It technically started in 2020, but it's still going. King in Black has been nuts. And I'll bring that back up at the end of the show.
All right.
There's a rumor about it.
Excellent. All right. So for me, for best comic book category, I went by the comic book that, you know, when, because I read all mine digitally. So I get them on Wednesdays when they come out, like the new stuff. And, you know, I decided, like, which one do I, you know, always have to read first as soon as I see it? And that is Red Sonja by Dynamite. It's written by...
Really?
Yeah, written by Mark Russell. And it's just amazing. Like, it's so good. Like, from like this run that Mark Russell's doing is phenomenal. Like, he is a really good writer. And I love Sword and Sorcery, but he does it in such an interesting and brilliant way. It's my go-to. And I have a number of honorable mentions. Thor by Donny Cates has been really great this year, or in 2020. Superman's Pal Jimmy Olsen by Matt Fraction came to an end in 2020. That was another one that, you know, was one of my go-tos whenever it came out. And a couple that didn't start in 2020, but they came out through 2020 and I read them. Also, both by Donny Cates is Cosmic Ghost Rider and Thanos Wins. Thanos Wins introduces the concept of Cosmic Ghost Rider. So Cosmic Ghost Rider essentially is like Frank Castle, the Punisher, dies, and he makes a deal with Mephisto to become the Spirit of Vengeance. So he becomes Ghost Rider, and then he makes a deal with Galactus and becomes one of Galactus's heralds. So then he becomes Cosmic Ghost Rider. So not only does he have the power of Ghost Rider, he's got the power of the Silver Surfer, essentially. Interesting concept. You know, Thanos wins. You know, it's a fun time travel storyline where a Thanos from the future brings a Thanos from the past, essentially, to, you know, because Thanos has beat all his... all the heroes, he's beaten all his enemies, and he wants to die. He wants to die so he can be with Lady Death. So who better to kill Thanos than Thanos? So he brings a younger version of himself, basically, to kill him. It was awesome. All right, so next up is Best New Comic Book. So I'll throw this to you, Kev. What was the best new comic book of 2020, in your opinion?
All right, best one out of nowhere, expected nothing from it, got hit right as pandemic started, and then it was the big, like, hey, we're back release, mm-hmm. is Firepower.
Nice.
So for Ragnar there, Robert Kirkman, who did Walking Dead, this is his martial arts epic, and it's going to be epic. He released Volume 1 graphic novel first. No individual, you know, floppy issues of staples, released a full graphic novel first. And it was like, this is just the prequel. After this, we're going to start running. And you're like, holy crap, this is amazing. There's so much happening already. And I didn't care a bit about it. I got a copy through the library. I'm like, eh, I'll check it out. And it was so good, I had to immediately add it.
Nice. And any honorable mentions?
I really, really liked No One Left to Fight, which is pretty much Dragon Ball Z with the serial numbers filed off. But what if we're done with all the battles, Goku says, you know, I want one last road trip. Who's coming with me? And along the way, they meet everyone from the series, you know, their versions of it, to do, hey, this is probably the last time I'll see you, because there's no battles left. We've won. I'm not going to keep running around. I'm going to just stay home. But I'm going to see everyone one last time. And stuff comes out, secrets come out, and, you know, relationships and all. It was good.
Excellent. For me, the best new comic book, first up, you know, hands down for me is Maestro. It's from Marvel Comics, and it's about the character called the Maestro, which is basically a future version of the Hulk that has basically gone insane. Like, he rules, you know, there was a nuclear war on Earth, all the heroes are dead, he's one of the last ones, and he basically takes over what's left of New York. He becomes a ruler called the Maestro. So this was a concept first introduced in 1991 or 1992, with Peter David and George Perez. It was a two-part graphic novel that introduced this character and the Hulk having to go to the future to basically overthrow his future self. So this is a prequel to that. This is how the Maestro came to power, how the Hulk turned insane, and what happened. And it was awesome. Like, there were so many twists and turns, you know, like, there's another hero that plays a prominent role in this miniseries that I didn't see coming. It was one of those last page reveals. I don't want to say who it was, but it was phenomenal. And we finally get the answer to that question: is the Hulk the strongest one there is? Yeah, and the art was fantastic. It wasn't George Perez, but the art was very akin to Gary Frank. I can't remember the name of the artist, but it was great art. And then I got a couple honorable mentions. First up is Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles: The Last Ronin. So what this is, again, this is a future story of the Ninja Turtles, where it's several decades later, and there's only one turtle left. So the whole first issue, and there's only been one issue so far, we don't know who that turtle is, because he wears a black mask instead of a colored mask, and he also wields all the weapons of the turtles. So he has a bow, he has katanas, he has scythes, he has nunchucks. And it's basically him going on a quest of revenge against the Shredder's grandson, who it's implied is the reason why the other three turtles are dead. And the other three turtles are there with him on this journey, and, you know, as basically ghosts that, you know, talk to him. And we don't know, like I said, we don't know who the surviving turtle is until the end. And it's mind-blowing. It really is. It's like, well, he's got, you know, like, there's all these clues leading up to it. It's like, well, he's making jokes like Michelangelo. He's serious like Raphael. He has some technical expertise like Donatello. He, you know, has got the tactical thinking like Leonardo. Which one is he? And it was really cool. And it's a story that's done by the original creators, Eastman and Laird. This is the first time they came together to do a Ninja Turtles story in decades. So, yeah, it's amazing. It was absolutely awesome. And last but not least, I just found this last month. It's called Norse Mythology. It's from Dark Horse Comics. It's based on the book Norse Mythology by Neil Gaiman. And basically, yeah, they're just, each comic is basically a chapter from that book. And it, you know, it's basically Neil Gaiman's take on Norse mythology. So Ragnar, I think you'd really like this.
That sounds right up my alley, man.
Yeah, it's really cool. It's definitely definitely one of the reasons that it's piqued my interest in Norse mythology, for sure. And it's really good. All right, so our next category is Best Podcast or Audiobook. Ragnar, do you have a favorite podcast or audiobook that you listened to in 2020?
Well, I do have a favorite podcast. It is definitely not really pop culture-y, but I found it on Spotify, and it's called Marketplace. And it's kind of like a show about business news and economics. It's an American show, but they present it in a really fun and interesting and accessible way.
Okay.
And so it's about a 20-minute podcast, and I listen to it basically every day just to feel connected to the wider world economically.
Nice.
So it's nerdy, but not like cool nerdy.
Hey, there's nothing wrong with that. Nothing wrong with that, man. Kevin, best podcast or audiobook?
Other than this one, of course.
Of course.
Oh,
of
course. Damn, I should have said that.
All right. So, like, there's a lot of big ones I listen to. I listen to a lot of Kevin Smith ones. I listen to Astonishing Legends, which is, like, a lot of paranormal and crypto and myth and stuff like that. But the one over the last year that I think is really adding something to the geek community, and it's going to sound like a suck-up, but it's not, is I think the Wizards podcast has been doing a lot. So it's over on Retro Network. They are going through the Wizards Guide to Comics magazine issue by issue. Every episode's a new issue. But then they have all these extra episodes where they're interviewing staff that used to work for Wizard. So they're talking about all these things that happened in comics in the 90s, and these people are like, oh yeah, we had this meeting about Image Comics, we had this meeting about DC Comics, these people came in, this project never happened, here's how online killed us because we didn't hop online and no one knew what to do with it. The internet was just, you know, back when we thought the internet was just this fad that was going to go away. But they're really like adding something to a thing that was huge for comic collectors in the 90s and then really forgotten about now. And they're over the process of this, they're giving it kind of like a place of honor and doing a lot of research and history for it. It's been lots of fun. And I think it'll be, you know, as people deep dive into history of comics, I think a lot of the stuff they're finding will be found useful for other people later on too.
Excellent. Excellent. For me, the best podcast or audiobook, I'm going to go with the Comic Conspiracy Podcast. It's a podcast that I've been listening to for probably 10 years now, or close to. You know, it's a group of guys. It's produced by a guy that owns a comic book store down in Sunnyvale, California. And, you know, they go over... I get a lot of my comic book news from these guys.
Cool.
And a lot of comic book trends and that sort of thing. They're fun to listen to. They used to record like at the comic book store weekly, but because of COVID and all the restrictions, now they're doing like what we do and record over Skype. So they've adapted to the pandemic and they've done very well that way. It's one I listen to every week. Also iFanboy. I've been listening to them for years and years and years now. Again, I get a lot of my comic book reading news from them.
That the US government is now
but unfortunately because of the pandemic, like I used to go to our local walking track on my days off. I used to, you know, at least put in an hour of walking on my days off, but because of the pandemic I it was only open for a few months and now it's closed again. So I haven't been listening to as many podcasts as I used to. So I'm hoping this year when the walking track opens up, you know, fingers crossed, I can get back to listen. Cause I used to listen to so many and there's so many I used to listen to Comic Geek Speak. I haven't listened to them in months. And some Star Trek podcasts and also I'm also subscribed to Audible. So I have a few audiobooks I got to listen to. Next year, hopefully, we'll be better in with this category. It was definitely a category that was affected by 2020. All right, so best book. So this is a book that you read in 2020. Doesn't necessarily have to be released in 2020. Ragnar, what was your best book of 2020?
Well, I got to do a best book and then an honorable mention.
Okay.
So neither of these books came out in 2020, but I finally read both of them. So the first one was I started reading The Dresden Files about a hard-boiled detective wizard, which, and, you know, I picked up the book the first time. I looked at the artwork. I read the back, and I thought, man, this sounds terrible. But eventually I read it, and I loved it. And I've read, I think, all the way through to book 7 in a row, and I'm just really digging it. It's a really cool series. They did make a TV adaptation of it. It was dreadful. They didn't even finish the whole season before it got canceled. And that's a real shame, because when you read the books, they're very cinematic, and you definitely could picture how this could be an amazing thing. And then the other book that I read this year was I started reading the Jack Reacher series, which they also made a terrible movie out of. But the book is awesome. And the first one I read, it's called Killing Floor. I think it's been out for like 20 years or somewhere in that ballpark. And Jack Reacher is like a retired military policeman. And it's got that kind of like the stranger wanders into town and then uses a lot of extreme violence to help the townspeople with whatever dilemma they're having.
Yep.
And boy, it was a hell of a read. Unfortunately, the movie with Tom Cruise was not true to the books in any way, but the first book was just killer. And so those were my two favorite reads of 2020. The first Dresden Files book, which is called Stormfront, and The Killing Floor, which is the first Jack Reacher book.
Excellent. Kevin, best book for 2020.
All right, so I'm going to apologize to Ragnar. I think this is my last one for comic stuff. I got this as an advanced reader copy, which is good because the book is like $85 or $100, and I can't buy that. Yeah, I can't do that for one book.
Yep.
It's called Comics and Stuff, and it was near 400 pages. It's Couch Professor, and this is his big, like, publisher parish book. But it's what we reveal about our personalities and our lives by the stuff that we have. So he does both sides of, like, okay, you're a collector. What's important? What's showcased? What's on the shelf? What's buried in a box? What's, you know, nice and clean? What's dusty? But then he goes and he takes all these indie comics and says, okay, here's Timmy. Timmy's our main character. Here's a picture of his room. Everything drawn in this room is there for a reason. Everything in this reveals stuff about that character. And then he's showing how, you know, like this thing seems insignificant, but it's there for a reason. There's a picture of family. Okay, why is there a picture of family? The family comes in later on. All right, later in the book, when that picture is no longer there, is that a revelation of something else happening to the character? And I was just like, holy crap. Like, just stuff I never even thought of. So I'm looking around my own room and my own stuff. I was like, oh, geez, he's right. Like, you could just walk in here and understand a lot of stuff going on.
Cool.
It almost, it's like if you've ever watched Psych, when he, you know, sees a room and gets a gauge of people right away, and, you know, people with that sort of memory technique, it's a whole book just like, okay, what do we reveal about ourselves? What does it reveal about fictional characters? It took me months to get through. It's so dense, but it was fascinating. Did a review, wrote back and forth to the guy a little bit. I was like, this is amazing. He's like, thank you. It took me 10 years to write it. I was like, all this shows.
Awesome. All right. So for me, the best book of 2020, again, not, it wasn't released in 2020, was a book called Lit Fuse. It's the biography of Harlan Ellison. Yeah, it was very in depth. You know, there's a lot about Harlan Ellison that I didn't know before I read this book. Even though they did and I just watched it. They did a documentary about him. The documentary is just it's almost like a Cliff Notes of Harlan Ellison's life. There's so much in-depth stuff that he did and was involved in, and, you know, just his views on life and so on and so forth. Very fascinating person, and I highly recommend it. It was actually a book I bought early 2020. I think it was from a gift card I got for Christmas. I think it was like an Amazon gift card, so I used it to order that book. So yeah, coming full circle, it was my favorite book of 2020 that I read.
Cool.
All right, so the next category is best TV series. So this isn't, we do have a category best new TV series. So that is a TV series that did launch in 2020. For this category, before we get to that one, it's just best TV series. So it could be one that came back, it could be a new one if you want. Another new one. It's completely up to you guys. So, Ragnar, what was, in your opinion, the best TV series of 2020?
Oh, The Mandalorian.
Excellent. Excellent. That is also mine.
I jumped on The Mandalorian train in January of 2020. Or maybe it was even February. I think I got into it at the end of February, the beginning of March, right when the shutdown was happening. And it was incredible. Everybody I knew had already said it was great, but I was really skeptical because I didn't like the new Star Wars films very much, except for Rogue One. Mm-hmm. But then when I watched The Mandalorian, it just, like, within probably the end of the first scene, I was just like, oh, this is what I wanted from Star Wars. And I watched all of it in one go. It was like 6 a.m. before I, you know, finished it and went to bed. And I just loved it. And this year I watched, you know, season one in the spring. And then when season two came out, I every week watched the newest episode. And I think I like season one more, but season two did not disappoint in any way.
Excellent.
So, Mandalorian for sure.
All right. That is also mine. But I have an honorable mention I could throw out there. I'll just jump on onto yours. Yeah, Mandalorian, amazing. I love that show. My first honorable mention is The Crown. I've been a sucker for The Crown since it debuted. I love that show. This season was probably, in my opinion, the best that they've done. And then, yeah, with us being, you know, on lockdown and stuff, I actually watch a lot more TV than I normally would. So there's actually, you know, like a bunch of honorable mentions. Like, The Crown is first and foremost. That would be my number one if The Mandalorian didn't come out this year. Or in 2020. Bosch had a good season. I really like Bosch. It's a cop show that's on Amazon. I highly recommend everyone to watch it. It's really good.
Okay. I haven't heard of it.
Yeah, it's based on a book series, actually. Titus Welliver plays the character of Bosch, and he's awesome. I love that actor. Better Call Saul had another great season. I think 2021 is the last season of Bosch, I believe, and also the last season of Better Call Saul. So it's kind of bittersweet. But they both had good seasons last year. And last but not least, The Boys. Season two was fantastic.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, The Boys was awesome.
Yeah. So, Kevin, best TV series of 2020.
Okay. So, I cannot pick Mandalorian because I had, like, just too much stuff going on when season two was airing. Mm. So I fell behind, and then I was like, screw it, I'll get to this when I can focus on it and give all my attention to it.
Yep.
And it seemed, and this might come up again later, but everyone was in such a rush to get their opinions out and talk about who appeared in the episode and what happened. I'm like, I just need to step away and watch it on my own. So anything on my list, I only pick stuff that I actually watched, read, whatever this year, not ones that just, you know, I know everyone else is picking. So I'm going to go and pick the last season of the She-Ra reboot on Netflix.
Hmm. Oh, yeah.
because the last two episodes, and it was five seasons long, I watched all of it. My wife's a little behind right now, but she'll get there. The last two episodes, each episode had a moment where I went, oh my God. And I was just thrilled. I was like, you paid off everything. You paid off five seasons in the last two episodes. Awesome. And I knew I wanted something. I didn't know what I wanted. I didn't know how they're going to pull it off. But then they did. And I was like, I'm happy. I'm so happy. Where's all the merchandise? Oh, there isn't any. All right. Well, I guess I'll just start over and watch it again then. Because I was going to give you guys money, but you didn't make any toys. I don't know why.
Yeah.
It's not He-Man. Like, don't think it is. It's totally just taking the essence of the characters, restart from the beginning. But, jeez, everything happened. It got bigger and bigger and bigger every season. To the point where stuff would happen, I'm like, there's no way they get out of this unscathed. There is no way. There's no way to tie this up. Like, I'm doubting a freaking kids cartoon. But it was fantastic. I loved it. And the last episode, I just marked out. I was so happy.
Excellent. That's another series I haven't checked out. I'm going to have to check that out.
Yeah, it's on my list. One of my friends just raves about it. So that's two people recommending it now. So I think I'll have to actually watch it.
Yep, for sure. All right, so now we're on to the category of best new TV series for 2020. Ragnar, do you have anything for the best new TV series?
Okay, does season two of The Mandalorian count?
No. It's okay if you don't have any. That's fine.
Yeah, I don't think I watched anything new that started in 2020. I did, like you were saying, during the pandemic, I have been watching, and it looks like we'll continue to be watching a lot more TV, but I've been more watching things that came out in the last few years that I hadn't got around to.
Yeah.
So the most recent thing I just finished was the new season of Big Mouth, which was, you know, offensive and hilarious and awkward and awful all rolled in together. That show has a weird mix of doing that. And it was funny and fascinating and also made me feel, bad about myself.
Excellent. All right, Kevin, best new TV series of 2020.
All right, it's a reboot, but I'm counting it as new because pretty much a generation took place in between.
Mm-hmm.
But the Animaniacs reboot on Hulu. Well, nice. On Hulu in the States. I don't know what you guys have it on. But it, like, a lot of times people say, oh, a kid's cartoon went right up to the edge. You know, they push it as far as they can. They go over the edge, far beyond the other side. And then when they get caught, go, oh, sorry. Were we not supposed to do that? Well, we did. It's too late. Sorry. There was stuff on there, like my wife and I were watching. We're just looking at each other like, how are they getting away with this? Is this still technically a kid's cartoon? It is still technically a kid's cartoon. How are they getting away with, like, Adult Swim level stuff here? I don't know. Like, there's a character that has pubes in an episode.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Like, they don't flat out show it, but it's like, oh, here's this crazy hair, and there's some crazy hair there, too. Are we supposed to ignore it? They're not drawing attention to it. It's there, and I know it's there, and they know it's there. And they're just daring me. Like, there's all sorts of crap out there. It's fantastic.
Excellent.
But, like, our kids in the room, I'm like, he doesn't care. He's not paying attention to it. They know what they're doing. It's just like how when you see the original Looney Tunes and you're like, I don't get all these Hollywood jokes. All these people were dead before I started watching cartoons.
Mm-hmm.
But you know that they got away with crap.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. It's funny when you said, you know, it was like a reboot that skipped a generation. I thought you were going to say what my pick was because it also fits that bill. And that's Perry Mason. From HBO. It's produced by Robert Downey Jr. And originally he was going to star in it as Perry Mason, but I guess, you know, with his schedule and stuff, he couldn't commit to it. So they got Matthew Rhys, I think his name is. He is from The Americans. He's actually an Irish actor, but yeah, he plays an amazing American. And yeah, basically this is like how Perry Mason became a lawyer. Like he started out as a private detective. Tatiana Mussolini's in it. It was really good. It was, you know, John Lithgow was in it. It's a good period piece. From what I understand, there is going to be more seasons coming. And yeah, it's on Crave TV in Canada if you have it, Ragnar. It's definitely worth watching.
Okay. And, I saw it.
And it's on HBO in the States. So, it's definitely worth it. I really enjoyed that. My honorable mention, first honorable mention, is The Queen's Gambit. And that's a series from Netflix based on a novel called The Queen's Gambit. It's a limited series. There's not going to be any more seasons after this one. So I think it's 5 episodes or maybe 6 episodes. With Anya Joy Taylor, I think her name is. Really good.
She was great.
Oh, yeah.
She was great.
You've seen it, Ragnar?
Yeah, I just finished it last week, yeah.
Nice.
It was stellar. The thing that was cool about it is I'm a huge fan of the guy who, like, created the show and directed and wrote all the episodes. He also did a series called Godless.
Okay.
Which is Western, and it was the same thing. It was a limited series, so it was like 5 or 6 episodes, and it was a Western. And he did Logan. I don't think he directed Logan. I think he just wrote it.
Okay, yeah.
But Logan was, you know, one of if not the best of the, you know, Marvel X-Men universe movies. So, yeah, huge fan of him, and I think he's going to keep churning out some stellar stuff because so far, everything he's done has been awesome.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, it was fantastic. It was great, great series, good period piece. And well acted. Not really honorable mentions, but just mentions because I did watch these, and they did pique my interest. First up, Tiger King. And the reason why I bring that up is because it was a show that my wife and I, once we started watching it, we kept going with it. It's like, you know, these are awful people, and we shouldn't like watching the show. But I got to know what happens. You know, it's kind of like done in the format of 48 Hours, except there's no host. And I love 48 Hours. I watch that all the time. So, Tiger King, my wife and I actually did watch it, and I didn't mind it. And also Netflix rebooted Unsolved Mysteries. And I really enjoyed it. We're just getting through season 2 right now. My only complaint is there's no host. So basically, it's the interviewees that narrate the story, you know, that they're telling. Mm-hmm. I really miss, you know, having Robert. Robert Stack's no longer with us. But I really think they should have found someone to host this show. You know, somebody, you know, like you need that presence. But other than that, it's good. I really enjoy it. Kevin. Oh yeah. Yours was Animaniacs. So, I think we've got past this one. So let's move on to best TV episode. So, is there an episode of any shows that you watched when you were like, man, this is the best. This is absolutely the best. Kevin, we'll start with you. Best TV episode.
Oh, jeez. The last She-Ra one, I absolutely loved. That was very good. What else? I can't stop. All right. Everything else is this year, but I cannot stop thinking about this. So for the other podcast, for the wrestling one, we just watched the second episode of Saturday Night's Main Event from 1985. And it features Uncle Elmer's wedding. So this was Hillbilly Jim, who who a lot of us remember from the 80s height of Hulk Hogan wrestling.
Oh, yeah.
Hillbilly Jim's Uncle Elmer came in, part of the Country Boys, the Hillbilly team. And he gets married. This is apparently a real wedding to his actual in real life girlfriend in the middle of the ring as the second episode of Saturday Night's main event. The crowd absolutely shits all over it. They're booing, they're throwing stuff in the ring, and this is this poor woman's actual wedding. There is also, right before it, there is an amazing fight between Rowdy Roddy Piper and Mr. Wonderful Paul Orndorff, where they just beat the hell out of each other, fall out of the ring, and then just keep fighting on the floor, the entranceway, the locker room, everything. It's great. But for the wedding, the announcers are Vince McMahon and Jesse Ventura, and Jesse Ventura just says, screw it, and is a complete ass for the entire thing. He says the worst things. When they kiss, he says it looks like two carp going at it.
Oh!
The whole thing is just a complete joke, and then it seems like they give up and they're just trying to get each other going. Like, screw it, let's forget we're on TV and just make and entertain ourselves. It's so damn funny. It's one of my favorite, like, I have a headcanon list of, like, the greatest TV episodes I've ever seen. I don't have a whole lot of wrestling on there, despite watching it all my life. This is fantastic. Like, I've already watched it twice. And it's existed, you know, since 85. It's been there nearly my whole life, waiting for me to discover it.
Yeah.
But it's on WWE Network. When it shocked me, if it's on YouTube, oh my god. It's one of the most entertaining hours I've seen all year.
Nice. Excellent. Okay, well, first up, Kevin, like, you haven't watched season 2 of Mandalorian. Is it okay if we spoil something?
Oh, I know everything.
Oh, okay.
That happens, and one of your later categories, I have a feeling this might come up.
Yes, and it will. Your feelings are correct.
Okay.
Gun Padawan.
Yeah, you're fine.
So best TV episode, Mandalorian season 2, episode 8, which is chapter 16, it's the season finale.
That's your pick.
That is my pick. Oh man.
Okay.
My wife was getting annoyed because I literally watched it like probably 10 times. She's like, really? You're watching it again?
Yeah.
I'm like, hello. Like, you know, you got Boba Fett, you got Katie Sackhoff, you got the Darksaber, you got Moff Gideon and Mando fighting. You know, and he's wielding the Darksaber. You got Mando in possession of the Darksaber. And what's that, you know, what's that going to mean going forward? you got the Dark Troopers. You got, and Luke Skywalker. Like, I can't say enough. It was jaw-dropping. It was so amazing. It was my favorite episode of 2020. Ragnar, your favorite TV episode of 2020?
Well, I was actually going to go with, I believe it was episode 6, which is The Return of Boba Fett.
Yep.
Visually, it was not the best episode of the season. I believe the episode that preceded it, where we meet Ahsoka, was probably the best in terms of cinematography. That was probably the best episode possibly of the series.
It was awesome, yep.
But The Return of Boba Fett, when I saw Slave One fly in the distance, like, I'm pretty sure I started crying because I was just so happy and excited for that moment. They sort of had been teasing at it that Boba was going to return. You know, those of us who recognize the actor's name in the credits were like, oh my god, I'm pretty sure Boba Fett's going to show up in this season. But then when he did, it was amazing. Mm-hmm. I felt the same way when we saw that X-Wing come in the last episode. It was like, oh my god, that's Luke. It's going to be Luke. But I got to pick the Return of Boba Fett because, man, that was a huge moment for me.
Oh yeah, absolutely. It... You know, and then when he puts the armor on, it's like, yes. Because, I mean...
Oh, and he just kicks butt, too, man.
Yeah, I mean, let's be honest. He got shortchanged in the original trilogy. You know, like, he you know, there's all absolutely. This build-up, in Empire, and it was cool in Empire, and then he gets taken out like a chump in Return. It's like, ah, man, you know? This is, you know, him back, and he's, you know, had time to dwell on what happened, and now he's back, and he's kicking ass, and
And he's got his own show now, so that's also exciting too.
Yep. And,
but yeah.
And that episode was directed by Robert Rodriguez.
Cool. I mean, I had read online, and I'm not sure if this is true or not. Maybe it talks about it if you watch the Gallery series. I haven't watched season twos yet.
Neither have I.
But I read online that Robert Rodriguez got called in last minute. They had a different director lined up for the episode, and the director had to bail for some reason. And Jon Favreau and Dave Filoni are friends with Robert Rodriguez in real life, so I heard that they called him basically last minute.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I've watched that episode like 5 times already, and that's why that episode isn't as visually stunning as many of the other episodes in the series. It's more just gritty action.
Yep.
And I you know, that would make sense if he got called in last minute and was more focused on the action than the cinematography, because he didn't have a chance to storyboard it. But also, that is Robert Rodriguez's style.
Mm-hmm.
You take a camera and a whole bunch of guns, and you go out in the desert and you make a kick-ass action movie. So, you know, that episode is one of the few episodes where you can tell right away, like, oh, yeah, this is directed by so-and-so. Like, it has all of his signatures in it.
Yep.
So.
I agree. I thought it was fantastic, you know. And especially if it was last minute, I think he hit it out of the park.
Mm-hmm.
But all right.
So that would be my pick.
Excellent. All right. So let's move on to best movie. Now this one, I will say, it should be a movie that was released in 2020. Just because I really worked hard at finding a movie that was released in 2020 to put on this list. this was the hardest category for me, personally.
Yeah.
Because there was one movie I was like, oh, I love that movie. Because I watched it in 2020, but then I found out it was released in October 2019. So I couldn't use it. So, all right. Best movie. And for me, I'll kick it off. I'm going with The Invisible Man. And I put a question mark beside that because I really didn't watch any new movies in 2020. And that is literally the only movie I saw in the theater in 2020. And it was okay. I'm blanking on the actress's name. She's from Mad Men. She's from Handmaid's Tale. Elizabeth Moss. I love her. You know, I think she's fantastic. She was good in this movie. And actually, I just seen her in an Amazon movie the other day. What's that movie called? It just got released, but I guess it would be 2021. And yeah, she was really good in that too. She's a great actress. Was it the best? You know, would it have been the best movie? Like, I have a feeling, had Black Widow been released, that would have been my favorite movie of the year. But it wasn't. And Wonder Woman definitely wasn't on that list for me, even though I haven't really seen it. And I don't know if I'm ever going to see it. But, all right, Kev, best movie of 2020.
All right, you're right. There was not a whole lot to pick from, so I had to dig through as well. And the best movie released in 2020 that I actually got to watch, too, was Scoob.
Hmm.
The starts off as a prequel of how Shaggy and Scooby first meet, and then it becomes a later adventure. It's in the trailer and it's on the cover, so it's not secret, but they team up with Blue Falcon and Dino Mutt, which I went crazy for. And then there's all sorts of other little Hanna-Barbera winks and nods. It was just fun. It was cute. It was a good story. It's really well animated.
Cool.
I'm a big Scooby-Doo fan. I love the deep dives Hanna-Barbera stuff for, you know, characters that everyone else has forgotten about. But I thought this just added to it. I hope it made enough money that they can do more. And it's a shame that the toys haven't gone clearance yet, because they're just a little bit more than I want to spend. As soon as they go clearance, I think I'm going to grab them.
Nice. Ragnar, your best movie of 2020.
Well, the only movie that I was able to see in theaters this year is the local kind of like art house theater here did a marathon, or every week they showed one of the Lord of the Rings films. So I went and saw all three of them, even though I've seen them a bajillion times. But that was awesome. And the only actual movie that came out in 2020 that I tried to watch, and I was actually quite excited for it, was Mulan. And I turned it off after less than 5 minutes because it was terrible. And I had seen the trailers and I thought, this looks good. This feels cool. No, I was awful. And I watched about 5 minutes of it and moved on to something else. So, 2020, not a stellar year for movies.
No. Did you pay the $30 to watch Mulan?
No. So, my friend's boyfriend has a Disney Plus account, and my friend gave me the password to it. So they paid the money to get Mulan so their kid could watch it. Mm. But I've been watching The Mandalorian and whatever else is on Disney Plus, courtesy of my friend's boyfriend. So
excellent.
Yeah, excellent. So thanks.
All right, well, next category, Best Actress, TV or Film for 2020. All right, so I will kick it off with Gillian Anderson as Margaret Thatcher in The Crown. Because I'm an X-Files fan. And I've mentioned this before on the podcast, like when I talked about season 4 of The Crown. I'm an X-Files fan. I love Gillian Anderson. I think she's super sexy. You know, I had a big crush on her. You know, watching The X-Files when it first came out. And when I heard she was cast as Margaret Thatcher, I was like, I don't know about that one. I'm going to have a hard time not seeing Agent Scully. And to be honest with you, that 1 minute into her performance, I didn't even see Agent Scully. Like, that was completely out the window. She embodied Margaret Thatcher. You know, like, the makeup was amazing. That, you know, they aged her up. You know, they gave her Margaret Thatcher's hair, but it was the way she walked. She had Margaret Thatcher's mannerisms down, the way she spoke, the way she tilted her head. Immediately that was all out the window. And she did such an amazing job and such an amazing performance. On her last episode, like when Margaret Thatcher is kicked out of the Prime Minister, like when her party basically turns on her and she's got to give up, you know, leadership. It's sad. Like, you know, even though I can understand why people didn't like her, you know, like what, you know, basically, you know, what we're experiencing now in Alberta, like with our premier, is basically what Margaret Thatcher was doing in England. Like, it's called Thatcherism. And, you know, so I understand why people didn't like her, but I also understand why a lot of people do like her. And Gillian Anderson just did an amazing performance, like absolutely stellar. Gillian Anderson as Margaret Thatcher. She is my nominee for Best Actress in TV or Film for 2020. Kevin, Best Actress, TV or Film, 2020.
All right, for both of these categories, I went with what did I watch this year that when that person was on screen, I thought, I can't look away. I'm just captivated by this performance, you know, what for whatever reason. So even though it's a terrible movie, I'm picking Aubrey Plaza's performance in Happiest Season, which was Hulu's lesbian Christmas movie.
Oh, okay.
Everyone else is horrible in the movie. Every time she's on screen, you just go, I want everything good to happen to her.
Mm-hmm.
You can't look away when she's on screen. She's funny. She's charming. She's interesting. She's pretty. She just holds the scene. She gives the looks, and you're like, I want her to win. I want her to win. I want her to win. I am engrossed in her character. Mm-hmm. And she is the only one for the whole movie. But, I mean, like, I enjoyed her on Parks and Rec. I've liked her, you know, many other things. But to be such a bright, shining star when everything else was awful in it, I was like, I have to give it up for you.
And she's awesome, like, off-screen, too. Like, I've seen, like, there's a YouTube video that someone did of her, like, on Letterman, on Leno, on Jimmy Kimmel, and Conan. And she's just great. Like, she's just, like, so funny, like, normally. Like, yeah, and she's amazingly beautiful, too. And she was in Legion, the Marvel series. I actually dropped off. I think I watched the first two seasons, and then season three I kind of gave up. I think it's been canceled. But she was the reason why I stuck with it as long as I did, because she was amazing. All right, Kevin, best actress, TV or film? Or sorry, not Kevin, Ragnar. Sorry, Ragnar, best actress, TV or film?
Well, my first pick is I'm gonna go with. I don't know if I can get her name right here. Anya Josephine Taylor-Joy, the girl mm-hmm. from The Queen's Gambit. I yes. thought she was – I mean, I'm reading her IMDb, and I've actually seen a number of films that she was in but didn't recognize her from them.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought she was incredible. Every second she was on the screen, I couldn't take my eyes off her. She gave such a strong and interesting and compelling and sympathetic performance. I thought she was just incredible. But I also got to give a shout out to Rosario Dawson in The Mandalorian, because yeah. I'm obsessed with Rosario Dawson and everything she's in. I love her in, and getting to see her kick ass as a quasi Jedi was, well, fantastic.
Well, she was like made to be that character, you know, to be the older version of that yeah. character for sure. It's like Professor X, like yeah. Patrick Stewart. Like, there's no one else, you know, like, he was born to play yeah. that character. And I really think she was yeah. born to play that character in Star Wars. I really do.
Oh, yeah. I also, I can't think of her name right now. I also really like the actress who plays Cara Dune in The Mandalorian.
Mm. Yeah.
She was in the first
Deadpool
film, too.
Yep.
And she's like, was an MMA fighter, so watching her in The Mandalorian when she does some of the fight stuff, you're like, oh, this is believable. Like, this girl could actually fight like that. Like, when you mm-hmm. watch, you know, other films and it's like, you know, this actress who weighs 90 pounds soaking wet and she's picking up 300 pound guys, it's just kind of hard to believe it. But with this, in this case, it's like, oh yeah, no, she probably could do that.
Well, like you mentioned the gallery episodes on Disney Plus. I was actually watching that for season one of The Mandalorian, and on yeah. the season one finale, like when Moff Gideon blows up that power generator and Mando gets knocked out, she actually picks him up like in his costume and actually drags him.
Oh yeah,
into yep. the cantina. Like, that was real. That wasn't a stunt double. That wasn't a dummy that she was carrying. That was actually. Well, it might have been the stunt guy, but I was actually a human being in that Mandalorian outfit. And they were saying, yeah, yeah, it was like,
it didn't even look hard for her.
No, nope, yeah. It was like, you know, 300 pounds between the man and the suit and all that. And she dragged him in there.
Oh yeah. Yeah. She's incredible.
Yeah, she really is. And yeah, Anya. Yeah. She's amazing. I love her on, like yeah. I said, the Queen's Gambit, but she's also in like you said, she was in mm-hmm. Split, she was in Glass,
and the Witch, and yeah,
she's also in the later seasons of Peaky Blinders.
Oh yeah, okay.
So I got to get back to watching that show. I think I made it up to season three, and then I took a break, so I haven't been back yeah. to it. So I want to watch it just for her, because Peaky Blinders is a good show anyway, but. I really like her, but she's also in The New Mutants, that movie that came out last year. So based okay. on her, I might actually check it out, because other than that, I was going to give it a pass, but I like her.
Yeah. Didn't look that great.
Well, I'm waiting till it comes out on like on one of my, something I already paid for. Like when it comes out on Crave or Netflix or Disney Plus, then I'll check it out, but I'm not going to pay for it for sure.
Yeah,
but she's in it. She plays magic. So,
okay.
Yeah. All right. So next category, best actor, TV or film. Oh, sorry, Kev, did you do best actress?
Yeah, I did, Aubrey Plaza.
Yes. Okay. Okay. Sorry. Best actor, TV or film? Okay, so Kevin says I got you already keyed up. Who is your best actor for a TV or film?
All right, so again, I went with what guy has been on camera that everything he's doing is just captivating, that I have to watch them engrossed in the character.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think I've seen anything better than Roman Reigns for the last year on SmackDown. As full-blown heel, his new character of head of the table, I'm in charge of the family, every other member of my family here of the Samoan wrestling dynasty, I'm in charge, and you have to do what I say. So if I go out there and say, you got to beat this guy up, don't care that he's your friend, don't care whatever's going on, you're going to go out there and do it because I provide for this family. Are you trying to disappoint the family? And he's just, you just stare at him, you're like, man, he's doing so well. And then he's still wrestling well, too. But he's just such a great, cocky asshole, but believable in, I am the patriarch, I am the man for this family, and you will do as I say. And it's so believable and so well done, and he's brought, like, everyone up that's been in the storyline, too. I will skip through, SmackDown's 2 hours long, I will skip through an hour and 45 minutes, but I'll watch his 15. Look, every week, it's fantastic.
Excellent. Excellent. I'm doing it again. Ragnar, best actor for 2020.
Well, I'm actually going to pick Carl Urban in The Boys. Specifically in season 2, I thought he really killed it. Season 2 pushed his character a lot, and every second he was on the screen, I thought he was just killing it. Just, you couldn't take your eyes off him. He gave such a strong performance. And then, of course, I'll have to give a shout out to Mr. Pedro Pascal from The Mandalorian, because there's so many times when it's a man in a suit and you can't see his face, but you can absolutely see what he's feeling.
Mm-hmm.
And that's acting right there.
Excellent. That is so true. Excellent. For me, the best actor, and I was kind of going by like what Kevin was saying, you know, who do I love to watch every time he comes on screen? And this actor's in 3 of my favorite shows of 2020, and that's Giancarlo Esposito, who played Moff Gideon on The Mandalorian. He plays Gus Fring on Better Call Saul, and he plays Stan Edgar on The Boys.
Yep, that's right.
You know, he's amazing. You know, when he was wielding that darksaber, that was so awesome.
Yep.
and like Stan Edgar, like on The Boys, like, you know, like he's just amazing.
No fear at all.
No.
Yeah.
And I think there's more to his character. I'm so interested to see.
I'm waiting. I'm sure he's going to be a soup. I'm sure of it.
Yeah.
I'm just so sure eventually. I can't think of the character's name. The Captain America guy.
Homelander.
Homelander. I'm sure one of these days Homelander is going to push him too far, and he's just going to smack him down, and it's going to be so satisfying.
Yep. Agreed. So I have another honorable mention, and I'm sure you guys won't know this actor, but you might if you've seen some British shows. He's an actor named Ian Bartholomew. Was on the last few seasons of Coronation Street. I'm a Corey fan. I watch Coronation Street. I've been watching it basically every day since like 2012. It's a show my wife and I watch all the time. He plays one of the bad guys on the show. He plays a character named Jeff Metcalf, and he basically his character for the last year and a half has been mentally abusing his wife, and he lies and he cheats and he's like I hate him. I hate him so much. And to me, it's a testament to how great an actor this guy is. Like you genuinely hate this guy. It's kind of like, the way people used to talk about Cersei on Game of Thrones. You know, oh, she's such a bitch. I hate her. And, you know, and it's like you realize she's playing character, you know, like, but she's doing such a good job of it that you genuinely have these feelings of hatred and disgust for that person. And that's what this actor does on Coronation Street. Like, he's, unfortunately, spoilers, his character got killed just before Christmas. So he's no longer on the show. So I was kind of sad about that. I was hoping he'd get to go to prison, and then, you know, maybe in a year or two, he'll break out of prison and stir up some trouble. I like it when they do that for the bad guys. I hate when they kill off, you know, good bad guys. And he was a good bad guy, because he, you know, he was, you know, he... Such great acting. You know, he, like I said, you just hated him so much. But, you know, it's a testament to what a great actor he is. And I think in 2020, he was voted the most hated man in Britain.
Wow.
So, you know, again, a testament to how great he is as an actor. That, you know, people hate him so much. All right, so we are at the last category for the best of 2020. Best moment in pop culture in 2020. So this can be a moment that happened behind the scenes. It could be something that happened on a show, a movie, whatever you want. It could be, you know, anything pop culture related. So Ragnar, we'll start with you. Best moment in pop culture in 2020.
Well, I have sort of two. The first one was when we found out the name of Baby Yoda. That was pretty awesome. And then, of course, in the next episode when he just kept saying the name.
Yeah.
I do that to my cat, and it's the exact same response every time. She kind of perks up and looks at me just like that. So, yeah, Grogu would be my first shout-out. And the second one is a little bit more personal, but for me, it was in December when I decided that I was going to start collecting the Mandalorian action figures.
Nice.
And I haven't been interested in anything pop culture enough to collect figures since the Lord of the Rings films came out. And I really enjoyed the Mandalorian, and I thought, you know what? I'm going to start collecting the action figures. Now, I don't think they'll ever be worth money the way the figures from the first three films were, because everybody buys the figures now and stashes them away hoping they'll go up in value.
Yeah.
I just think it'll be a really cool and satisfying collection to have.
Yeah.
If it goes up in value, cool. I wouldn't expect that. Or, you know, not by anything significant. But I have all of the 6-inch figures now, not the Black Edition, which are the really deluxe fancy ones. I have the vintage looking ones.
Yep.
And they look more like toys you would play with and less like toys you would put on display. And I'm super stoked to have all of those. So that it's a bit more personal, but that's my favorite moment in pop culture of 2020.
Excellent. Kevin, your best moment in pop culture in 2020?
Well, like we've discussed before there, I didn't actually see the moment yet, but based on how much social media exploded, I'm guessing there was no bigger moment than last episode of Mandalorian.
Yep. I'll jump on to that, because that is my best moment in 2020 was Luke Skywalker showing up and being a badass as he should be on the season 2 finale of The Mandalorian. Because, you know, Last Jedi, and, you know, like, I don't want to ramble too much about this, but Last Jedi, Rise of Skywalker, you know, they did them dirty, man. Like, we didn't see Luke Skywalker as he should have been. This was Luke Skywalker as he should have been on The Mandalorian. It was fantastic. Yeah. You know, I was giddy. I was, you know, like, and you know, people complain, well, you showed up. No, he didn't just show up. You know, Grogu called to him. He used the Force to find him. You know, it paid off, yes, you know, but I mean, what better moment for Luke to show up? You know, like when the good guys are going to lose. They were about to die, and Moff Gideon was about to win. And then Luke Skywalker shows up and saves the day, like, as he should, because he is Luke Skywalker. You know, and it was so amazing. You know, I remember my jaw dropping, you know, and say what you will about the, you know, like the, you know, making him look younger and all that. I didn't mind it. It was okay. You know, it wasn't the best.
Yeah.
But, you know.
It's cool that they actually brought Mark Hamill in to do it, though.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And
because they could have just CGI'd it over a stunt performer and mm-hmm. just had him do the voice, but apparently he actually was there doing it all.
Yeah, and I'm cool, and that's cool. And in my mind, they did a better job. Like take for example, like when they brought Brent Spiner back in Star Trek Picard, and he did, you know, like he. You know, Brent Spiner's an older man now. Like, it's been a few years. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. he looked like an older man in Data makeup. Whereas this looked like Luke Skywalker as he would have looked. You know, like they did a really good job. I didn't cry like some fans did, but it was... I was there with my jaw dropped. My God. You know, I was sitting straight up. I couldn't believe what I was seeing. It was awesome. Yeah. And that's it. That concludes our best of 2020. So next year, a year from now, we'll be back here doing the best of 2021. But we have a couple more segments before we call this an episode. So let's move on to our brain candy episode. So this is, segment. This is the segment where we talk about something that we've been watching or reading or so on or so forth, and we make it a pick or a pan. So brain candy. So we're just talking about it. This is the first time, this first episode we've done since the end of the Mandalorian season 2. It gets a solid 5 out of 5 for me.
Mm-hmm. 6 out of 5.
Yeah. My only hope is next year they go beyond the side quest. Every episode format, you know, like I understand because of Grogu, because of the, you know, the nature of that quest, they had to do these side quests, but next year I'm really hoping they focus on the Mandalorian aspect, you know, now that he's got the Darksaber, you know, what does that mean? Yeah. Not to shit on season 2. It was phenomenal. It was great.
Oh yeah.
But I really think, you know, from here on in, it's just going to get better.
Oh yeah.
It was released on New Year's Day, and that's Cobra Kai season 3. My wife and I binged it in about a day and a half, and it was freaking awesome. I love this show. I can't say enough. And I'm not even the biggest Karate Kid fan. Like, you know, like I got to say, like I watched Karate Kid 1, Karate Kid 2, you know, when I was a kid in the 80s. I don't think I ever watched 3. I definitely didn't watch the next Karate Kid, but they do a good job of bringing back, you know, these actors that were in those movies, and they do a really good job of, you know, doing flashbacks and so on and so forth to bring you up to speed with what you need to know. And yeah, my brother-in-law recommended Cobra Kai. I decided to watch it on a whim, and it's amazing, and season 3 was fantastic. Definitely the best season they've done so far. And last but not least, I just wanted to throw this out there, the Doctor Who holiday special, it also debuted on New Year's Day. It was actually not bad. It could have been better, but not as bad as the previous season. I actually didn't mind the holiday special. And I still don't understand after all these years how British people, you know, when they see a Dalek, don't realize the danger they're in. Like they've invaded Britain how many times now? You know, it's like when, you know, you just know, you know, like, oh, you know, it'd be like a Klingon, you know, like Klingons walking around slaughtering people. It's like, hey,
yeah,
you know, maybe I shouldn't be hanging around here. But anyway, that's what I have for Brain Candy. Ragnar, do you have anything you want to share for Brain Candy?
I'm kind of in between everything right now. There's a ton of series that I'm going to start watching but haven't started yet. Probably the next on the list will be finishing season 2 of Cobra Kai and then moving on to season 3. But mostly right now, I have just been kind of working on myself and giving myself business-related projects to do every day just to take my mind off of the fact that I'm not going on vacation to Las Vegas this year and, you know, trying very hard not to compare how my life was a year ago because, well, lots of good things have happened and, you know, I've set myself up very well for the future. I definitely feel like, man, my life last year at this time was so much better than my life is right now.
I hear you.
So I've mostly just been trying to give myself enough work that I don't have time to sit around and think about anything.
Yeah. No, that's a good thing. That's a good thing. All right, Kev, do you have anything for Brain Candy this week?
All right, so I'm still slowly making my way through Stephen King's Danse Macabre, him going through history of horror. He only starts at like the 1950s because he's just doing what he was alive for and experienced, but he's going through books, the monster magazines, movies, TV shows, everything. It's just been like a real interesting history of it, but it's one I can do like a chapter at a time, then I'm like, okay, I'm good for the night. This was a lot. Today, I just found there's a guy, if I'm getting it all correct, his like social media name and his site and all is Paperback Paradise. And every couple months, he'll take everything from the site of people reviewing old paperbacks, sci-fi, fantasy, horror ones, all sorts of genre fiction. And he'll put together fanzines and sell them on Amazon. They're official like Amazon book products. So he'll be like, hey, here's the last 50 Western reviews we did for the site collected into a book. Here's the last 50 sci-fi ones. And I guess it's all sort of, it's reviews, but it's histories, it's author information, it's what was going on at the time, it's what these references are. It just looks like deep dives into old genre paperback stuff. So I just discovered it today. I ordered one. I have no idea if it's going to be good or bad yet. I'm hoping it's good because I'm excited. And he'll probably get more money from me if it is good.
Cool.
Excellent.
I have one question. I was going to make it a joke, but I won't. But Ragnar and I went back and forth a little bit on Facebook for something because we were both shocked at where a certain singer was last week. Quick question. What would you pick for best new album in 2020?
Best new album. Well, I'd have to say AC/DC. I can't remember the name of the album, but when it came out, I listened to it. I love AC/DC.
I think my pick, and not everyone may know this one, but my pick would probably be the new Ailstorm album. Ailstorm are a pirate metal band from Scotland that do not take themselves seriously at all have somehow made a career out of being drunken louts singing songs that are sort of about piratey stuff. But I listened to their new album. Oh, again and again and again and again, and it's by far their stupidest album and their silliest album, but the songs are really catchy, and I had the earworm going on with that album for most of the summer, so I think that'd probably be my pick.
You know, maybe you saying earworm and what you listen to the most makes me feel a little better about it. I know it was hyped, I know it was marketed, I know, but I really like the new Deftones album.
Yeah.
Probably is my favorite from 2020. But then I'm looking because I'm going to try to do better for 2021. There's like three albums tomorrow as we record this that look fantastic. And I'm like, oh, it's only January.
worry. This is going to be good.
Yeah. In theory, many of the bands that we like had a whole year to sit around and record new albums since there was no touring. That's so my hope. We should be looking at 2021 and 2022 as years when just tons of albums come out. But, well, we'll see.
Well, you'd think it'd make good business sense, right? Like, you can't tour, like, yeah, make the albums.
Yeah. Well, like, because tomorrow as we record, I think there's like 5 or 6 albums. I've listened to the singles from like 3 of them. Thought, okay, I got to listen to these full albums. Last week, the only rock metal album was Sammy Hagar and The Circle, which is all guitarists and a drummer that they're all friends. They've been doing like Skype Zoom recordings. So some are covers and some are brand new songs, but they just all record themselves and then but they jam over Zoom and then someone else mixes it.
Hmm. That's cool.
Hmm. All right. So let's move on to our Enders segment. This is where we talk about news or anything like that. More current events. So I have what turns out to, in my mind, a joke before I start talking about it. Okay, the acronym for Star Trek Discovery is STD, right?
Yep.
And the big event for season 3 that affects everything in season 3 is called The Burn. STD, The Burn. I had a couple things with Star Trek Discovery I wanted to talk about, and there's other stuff I want to talk about, so bear with me. There's a YouTube channel called Trek Culture. Oh, it drives me nuts. It's just a bunch of millennials that are in love with Kurtzman Star Trek. And it seems like there's a lot of YouTubers that are kissing CBS's ass when they're making these videos, and it really ticks me off because I but then I understand, like, because CBS historically will pursue legal actions against people that speak ill of their product, right? So I think a lot of these YouTubers are, you know, just expressing their love for Star Trek because they want the views and they don't want CBS coming after them. So I really think that's an unfortunate thing. And then on the flip side, because this happened, well, it happened just prior to the Rosario Dawson episode of Mandalorian. There's a YouTuber that does a series called The Heavy Spoilers Show. And I mean, the title of the show, the Heavy Spoiler Show, should tell you, like, if you don't want to be spoiled, maybe don't watch this video. and he does say that. So anyway, prior to the Rosario Dawson episode, he basically got the episode leaked to him. Like, he basically beat for beat explained what was going to happen in that episode, and he was completely right. So he unfortunately received a lot of backlash from viewers saying, you know, like, you ruined it. Like, you ruined the surprise. Like, how dare you? And blah, blah, blah. And so I commented on his page and I said, you know, you have nothing to apologize for. Your show literally says The Heavy Spoiler Show. You know, if you don't want to be spoiled, don't fucking watch the video, you know? But the reason why I bring this up is, Lucasfilm actually reached out to him and actually got in contact with him. And he actually talked to people from Lucasfilm and they said, you know, basically they asked nicely, like, hey, next time if you do, you know, something does leak, please don't, you know, maybe wait or don't, please don't share it, you know, because we have a lot of fans, you know, and we got a lot of people that put a lot of time in, you know, we're taking all these steps to, you know, keeping things secret because we want to surprise our fans. We want to, you know, so on and so forth. And, you know, we just don't want people, you know, ruining it for others, you know? and they were very nice about it to him, and he offered to, like, hey, you know, from, you know, I'll remove my show. And they said, no, don't, please don't do that. You know, just next time, if you do get that kind of detail, maybe don't share it. And they were very nice. Whereas CBS with Star Trek, they would have been suing that guy. They would have pursued legal action against them.
Yeah.
And
that sucks.
And it's a state of affairs between the two shows. Like, The Mandalorian is so good, and it's everything I would want.
Oh.
Whereas Kurtzman Star Trek is everything I don't want.
Yeah. I'm not watching any more of them. Yeah.
So I haven't been watching, but I have been keeping up with some plots on YouTube. So they moved Discovery, you know, 1,000 years into the future. You know, because one of the biggest problems in the first two seasons, in my opinion, was a problem right from day one, was continuity, right?
Their technology is way more advanced than anything we'd seen in Star Trek before.
Yeah, so they couldn't keep anything straight. But now the problem that they're having is they're not even acknowledging their own continuity at this point.
Oh.
Okay, so they did a two-part episode where they featured the Guardian of Forever. So right there, they're going against continuity again because they have a guy portraying the Guardian of Forever instead of the Guardian Forever being like a machine or something that's okay. Not machine nor man.
Yeah.
So they have a guy playing the Guardian. So Empress Georgiou, like for those who don't know, she's from she's played by Michelle Yeoh, and she was the original captain for Michael Burnham before Michael Burnham mutinied in season one and got her killed. And then Michael Burnham's future Klingon boyfriend ate her, her corpse. But that's neither here nor there. Then they crossed over into the Mirror Universe later in season one. And Philippa Georgiou is actually the Empress of the Terran Empire. She's this basically like the Space Hitler. Is the best way to describe her. Maybe even worse than Space Hitler. Because she actually...
Also hotter.
Yeah, that too. but she eats... Saru's species. I can't remember what they are.
Oh, yeah, right.
But she eats them. They're a delicacy. So she's a monster. She kills people. She murders people. She has no problem. And at some point during season two, she actually... Or at the end of season one and season two, she becomes part of the Discovery crew. She becomes part of Section 31. She's working with Starfleet. They've made her a captain. So, you know, the writing's terrible, right? So season three, they do this Guardian episode, and she ends up going back to the past to her spinoff series. Like, the Guardian of Forever, like, the whole purpose of them bringing the Guardian of Forever into the story was to basically take Michelle Yeoh over to her spinoff series as a means to do that. And kind of like, you know, how in Star Trek Into Darkness when Benedict Cumberbatch says, "I'm Khan." And, you know, so as the viewers were like, "Oh, he's Khan." But as Captain Kirk, having never met this guy before, I'd be like, "Who the fuck are you?" You know, like, that should have been his reaction.
Right.
So in this episode, when the Guardian of Forever says, "I'm the Guardian of Forever," you know, they should have been like, who? Because that, you know, Kirk hasn't met him yet, hasn't met the Guardian of Forever, because...
Oh, I see what you're getting at.
So again, they're ignoring continuity, but they're ignoring their own continuity, because, like, when Empress Georgiou leaves through the Guardian, and she had been part of the Discovery crew, they actually have... a little service for her, like, where they're all sitting around in the mess hall, having a drink, laughing about the good times they had with Georgiou. Oh, remember when she did that? You know, and they're having a laugh and a good cry. And I'm thinking to myself, what the fuck is wrong with you people? She's a monster. Like, you know, they're literally, you know, having a cry, you know, because they've lost their friend. You know, she was an important member of our crew. She left. but she's a murderer. She's a mass murderer. Like, why are you people feeling sorry for her that she's no longer part of your crew? Like, they can't even get their own continuity straight on that show. But anyway, I saw that, and it just kind of pissed me off.
Hmm.
Plus, you know, they're patting themselves on the back because they have the first non-binary character and first transgender character in Star Trek history. Or so they think. Because that's not true. We've had non-binary characters. We've had transgender characters on Star Trek before. You know, and they're patting themselves, you know, like in the first season when they, we had the first kiss, first gay kiss.
Oh, yeah.
In Star Trek. And it's like, no, that happened in Deep Space Nine. You know, like they don't even know their own history. And yet they're patting themselves on the back for doing, you know, such good work, but they're not. So anyway, I digress. That's all I have to say about Star Trek Discovery. It's over. Another season's gone, thank God. So anyway, I'm going to turn it over to somebody else. Ragnar, do you have anything for Enders?
Well, I just wanted to jump in with an afterthought to what you were just saying, and that is to say, I love how the Orville did it versus how the Kurtzman Star Trek did it. Especially in season two, the Orville tackled issues. Like the whole thing with the Mocklins being a single sex race, but then it turns out there are females. Even in season one, it was like the third episode that happened, and you're like, whoa, I thought this was a silly comedy show, but this is like an actual issue. And it didn't get resolved all neat and tidy.
Mm-hmm.
And I love how they did it because they didn't ram it down your throat, and they weren't like, you know, look, we're so woke, look at us. They were just like, this is a real issue, this happens, and we're going to make it happen in space too.
Mm-hmm.
And I just love that, and I think that is one of my biggest issues with all the Kurtzman stuff is that they keep being like, you know, yeah, admire us, heap praise upon us because we are so woke. And it's just like, man, this sucks.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is not good writing. This is not interesting. This is not compelling. This is just way too obvious what they're doing. So I just wanted to add that in there that I love how the Orville dealt with that. And I love that the Orville started out as like a silly comedy and turned into better than Star Trek. So, I'm super pumped for season three whenever that comes out.
Yeah, I'm hoping sometime soon. But like, I just want to jump onto what you just said about, you know, like how they're so proud of themselves for being woke and all this other stuff. It's like when they did the Deep Space Nine documentary, you know, they said, you know, we didn't think about it, but when you look at it, we were a black science fiction show. You know, like our main character was a black man. He was a single father. Yeah. You know, who had a black son. He had a, we had Cassidy Yates was a black woman. We had Worf. Yeah. Worf is, you know, portrayed by a black man.
Yeah.
You know, they were a black show, but they never, I never took it that way. It was a show. They were a family in space. I saw myself in Jake, you know, like if it was just my dad and I, like that would totally be us.
Yeah.
You know, but Kurtzman Star Trek, it's like, no, you got to be progressive. You know, look at how good we are. And that's not the way it should be. You know, like stories that should, you know, matter, not what you're doing with your characters. But anyway, Kevin, do you have anything for Enders?
I got a cool one and I got a serious one.
Okay.
I'll do the serious one since we're already there, kind of, and then close out with the lighter one. So, there's a big rumor that Marvel has stealth canceled Punisher.
Mm. Yeah, I heard whisperings about that.
And I understand why. I think if there's a character that needs to be on the shelf for a little while, I could understand why.
Yeah,
billion-dollar company, you don't need this attention, and you've already not, I forget what it's called, but you've not defended your IP, like you've already lost it there. might be time to put it on the shelf for a little while and come back to it later on.
Well, and just to shoehorn in there real quick, Kev, they've kind of already, like, what they've done is, like, with Cosmic Ghost Rider, like, that is Frank Castle. So in a way, they can still tell their Punisher stories, but in a different context, where it's in space, but it's so it's, you know, kind of like Star Trek, how they could, you know, tell a story about the Vietnam War, but it's not the Vietnam War because it's on a planet far away.
So you still got Frank for all of the, you know, actual comic fans, but you can get away from that bothersome logo right now.
Mm-hmm.
I just wanted to chime in. I didn't love the Punisher standalone series. I loved him in season 2 of Daredevil. I thought he was, like, perfect. He was cast incredible. And it was like, this is what the Punisher is like. I didn't love the standalone show. I felt like they kind of watered it down a bunch. And it just wasn't nearly as compelling for me.
I can see that.
I think him starring is problematic always. In a movie, is in a series, in a comic, because of what the character is. But him being a secondary character, the antagonist, even I think you could have him as, like, a host, a narrator in a way. like a Spectre or a Phantom Stranger for DC.
Mm-hmm.
But don't make him supernatural. They did that once already.
Don't do that. Yeah.
You know, but he could be, you know, a wandering Punisher. Like, he goes and he tells the stories of, this is this person that needs to be punished. I'm telling their story, and then I'll punish them at the end and move on to the next story.
So, like
almost like a horror host in a way.
Well, correct me if I'm wrong, Kevin, but the reason why they're doing this is because of what's happening, like, with like Trump and what are they called? The Proud Boys or whatever? Is that why?
Yeah. A lot of groups have taken that skull logo and embraced it as their own.
Oh, okay.
And Marvel did not defend the copyright. So now it's kind of like too late. I mean, yeah, they could probably go to court, but it's out there.
Yeah.
It's the Calvin pissing on something sticker on the back of a truck at this point.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
But they don't want, because they've done Punisher comics where he's flat out said, I'm not a role model. You want a role model? Captain America's right over there. He'd be glad to have you.
Yeah.
Like, Marvel has flat out addressed it in the comics, and it still hasn't made a difference. So I could see them, like, we don't want to draw attention to this character right now. Put him off to the side for a little bit. We'll come back later.
Yeah, I think that's probably what they do. And whether or not they keep John Bernthal or Bernthal, not sure how you pronounce it.
Bernthal.
Bernthal?
Yeah.
Whether or not they keep him as Frank or they recast it, it's hard to say. But I think you're probably right. They'll probably just put it to rest for a few years and then see where things are at down the road.
But correct me if I'm wrong, but on the show, was he actually wearing the skull shirt that often? I don't think he was.
No.
Not
that often.
And you don't need him to, really.
No.
It was, in fact, the times when he did, it was kind of cheesy. Like, it was like, we know what this is and we like it, but it's also like, yeah, that's kind of hokey. Like, you know.
Yeah.
But,
Kev, you had something else for Enders?
I have a lighter one. So, okay. Marvel's got the King in Black big epic storyline going on right now. It's the god of all the symbiotes, Null. And he's fighting everyone. So, you know, the symbiotes, as we've seen with Venom and Carnage and all, bond themselves to someone. It turns out they're all from one planet. They, you know, invade other planets. Someone has to stop them. They have certain weaknesses that you got to get smart to. But they have a bond and, you know, a host parasite thing. Well, that series ends about March or April. Coincidentally, in March, one of Marvel's new properties that they got from Disney buying Fox is going to have an issue one with aliens. Which is also sort of a parasite-host relationship.
Interesting.
So there's a little rumor there that Kevin Black might bring aliens into Marvel Universe.
Wow, that'd be crazy, man.
Yeah. And they've already shown an image of them doing a Predator eventually too.
Wow.
I mean, it'll probably be like Conan, you know, we'll have a bunch of series while we got the IP. If we lose it, we lose it. We'll pretend this never existed.
Yeah.
But we'll
yeah.
have fun while we can.
Excellent.
Yeah. So, yeah, I'm buying King Black now, and I already put a pre-order for Alien. So I was like, if this happens, I got to see it.
Yeah, man.
Excellent. Speaking of Conan, I just wanted to jump on that since you mentioned Conan. So it was a couple nights ago. I don't know why this happened. Someone sent me like something from Facebook Marketplace, like this collection that somebody was selling. So I went to Marketplace. I don't really go on there very often. And there's you know, I'm a member of a few of our buy and sells. Every once in a while, my mom will message me, "Oh, did you see this on the buy and sell? You know, might be interested." So anyway, I was going through it for some reason, and I came across this guy selling Savage Sword of Conan, the magazines. From the 80s, 90s, and 70s. And he's from a town near me, but he actually works in my town. So I messaged him. So I bought 4 issues of Savage Sword for $9. And they're in great...
That's nothing.
Yeah, they're in great condition. So, like I said, I haven't really bought much off the buy and sell ever. But I know because one time I had to go pick something up for my mom that because people were worried about people being robbed and so on and so forth, you have to meet at a safe place, right? So you meet at the Friesen Brothers, which is a grocery store chain in the province that I live in. So I went to the Friesen Brothers parking lot and I met the guy there. I felt like I was buying drugs. You know, like I go up to his truck.
Yeah.
He gives me a bag. I give him money. And we both go our separate ways, right? So I really felt like I was doing a drug deal. I felt pretty badass. But today I also because he's like, you know, I got Conan Saga. I got a bunch more on the buy and sell. So I went and checked it out as soon as I got home. Put in an order. Bought more today. It's like he's my dealer, you know, because he's telling me, you know, if you like this, I got more. You know, all you got to do is send me a message. And there we are. Now I've got 12 issues of Savage Sword of Conan that I got to read. Nice. So I might buy some more. But anyway, I had a couple more things to throw out there for Enders real quick. Deadpool is coming to the Marvel Cinematic Universe with Deadpool 3.
Yeah.
That is confirmed. I'm all on board for that. That's awesome.
They said it'll be R-rated.
Yep.
R-rated, yep.
Yep. And also, I saw today that Chris Evans is coming back as Captain America.
I saw the same article. Yeah,
because, you know, at the end of Endgame, that was supposed to be his farewell. He wanted, you know, to move on from the character,
yep.
You know, because it's a lot of work, a lot of working out and all that sort of stuff. But I guess maybe sitting at home doing nothing, he got really thinking, you know what? I actually like making those movies. I think I'm going to keep doing that. And
yeah.
I mean, they could do a whole movie just him returning the stones. You know, like, yeah. like that's a whole movie in itself right there.
Mm-hmm.
But before we end the program, did you guys, either one of you watch Wonder Woman 1984?
No.
Okay.
I heard it was dreadful.
So is it right if I spoil it for you guys? I haven't watched it, but I've watched enough YouTube videos about it.
No, I don't think I'm ever going to see it. So
yeah, you're fine. Yeah.
So it's pretty much devoid of logic. Diana told Batman in Justice League that she went away for 100 years, but apparently she forgot to mention the time she you know did a bunch of shit in 1984. So they bring Chris Pine back. So basically, there's a stone or something that if it grants wishes. So her wish was for Chris Pine to come back, as Steve Trevor from the first movie. So he comes back, but he doesn't come back as himself. He basically quantum leaps into another guy's body. So during the movie, everyone else sees this other guy, but Diana sees Steve Trevor, right? but she's hanging out with this other guy for the length of the movie, having sex with him and stuff. So this guy's basically, his body's being used, and Chris Pine is in the driver's seat. To me, it's like, okay, if the Wishmaker thing that they had, the stone or whatever, like, it literally, anyone makes a wish and it grants it. So why does Chris Pine have to come back as a quantum leap? Like, I don't understand that. And what about this other guy? You know, apparently he's married, he's got wife and kids. Like, at some point, doesn't Wonder Woman say to herself, like, maybe I shouldn't bang this guy? You know? Like, you know, like, I'm literally kind of raping him, sort of. You know, like, this guy has no control over what's happening.
That sounds terrible.
You know? So I don't understand why they had to do that. And then, yeah, they're passing by, I think, the Smithsonian, and they need a plane to fly, so they grab a jet that's just hanging out at the Smithsonian that apparently is filled up and ready to go at any time. that a modern jet, like an 80s jet, that can easily be piloted by a World War I veteran. So that doesn't make a lot of sense. So Wonder Woman can get headbunted by Superman in Justice League, but a strong breeze holds her back in this movie. My biggest complaint was Wonder Woman is okay with banging a guy that is not actually Steve Trevor.
Yeah. That doesn't sound okay.
No. And I was on the fence, you know, because I've been missing, you know, superhero movies. And DC, I generally, like, at this point, I think the last movie I went to go see was Justice League, like, when I made the effort to actually go to the theater. So now I kind of go by word of mouth. Like, Shazam. No, I shouldn't say that. Shazam, I did go to the theater because I love that character too much. I had to go. Aquaman, yeah. I did go because my mom actually went, and she was raving about it, so I had to go see it. But I think she just liked seeing Jason Momoa with his shirt off. like Wonder Woman, I was like, I don't know if I'm going to go see it. And I'm glad I didn't. Like, my cousin and her husband are kind of geeks like me. And they watch these movies, and they actually paid the $30 to watch Wonder Woman, and they're like, yeah, don't do it. Save your money. Trust us.
Yeah.
So that's too bad. I keep hoping that DC's going to figure it out and do something worth watching, but...
Like I said... I quite enjoyed the Gotham TV series. It had its flaws, but as a whole, I quite enjoyed it. But, man, the DC movies have been rough.
Yeah, I didn't mind Shazam.
They haven't really hit it out of the ballpark yet.
Like, Shazam, for what it was, like, I actually liked it. I actually thought they did a pretty good job. You know, like, not completely true to the source material, but more based on Geoff Johns, version of Shazam. Still drives me nuts they don't call him Captain Marvel, but that's whatever. But other than that, it's like, I don't know. But now we're getting all these DC actors jumping over to Marvel. What's his name there? Batman, Christian Bale. You know, he's going to play Gore the God Butcher, which...
Yeah, that should be great.
I don't know what they're going to do with... Like, this movie's got to be epic. Because, I mean, you know, like, they got...
Oh, it's going to be insane.
Natalie Portman coming back. She's going to be wielding the hammer. You got Gore the God. Like, Gore the God Butcher should be its own movie. Like, that was such a phenomenal story. And if you haven't read it, Ragnar, you got to go read it. It's so good. It's like 11 or 12 issues. It's so awesome.
I have not read it. I just sort of read the, Wikipedia file.
It's worth it. It's so worth it. Probably my favorite Thor story. Like, Marvel Thor. But, yeah, definitely worth reading for sure. And like I said, that should be just a whole movie. That could be a mini series, just that 12 issue. But anyway, I digress. So thank you, gentlemen, for joining me on the best of 2020. But before we go, let's play that little game of where can we find you on the internet. You can check out my blog at randomnerdist.blogspot.com, and we will be doing more episodes of the Pop Culture Pub very soon. We've got another Deep Space Nine episode coming out in the not-too-distant future, and again, we're going to be talking about our favorite breakfast cereals on our next episode. Kevin, where can we find you, sir?
All right. My home blog is over at masklibrary.com and at masklibrary for all the major social medias. And then if you like my voice on here, I got the other podcasts over on the Retro Network. That is the House Show podcast, where we review retro wrestling.
Excellent. And Ragnar, where can we find you, sir?
Well, RagnarTheTrader.com is my main website, but I also have an Etsy store, and you can find me on either Facebook or Instagram as Ragnar the Trader.
Yes, and I highly recommend Ragnar's drinking horns. They are awesome. And Thank you very much. I showed my brother-in-law. He loved it. Now when I drink beer at home, that's what I drink it in.
Nice.
I don't want to take it. Like, I mean, we're locked down anyway, but I was thinking, like, next time, I go to a backyard barbecue or whatever, like, sometimes you drink a little too much. I think I'm just going to leave it at home because I'm just afraid it's going to get wrecked.
They're pretty hard to wreck, but they're pretty easy to leave behind.
Yeah, but that's the thing. Like, I'm one of them guys that I had a little too much to drink, and I smashed the screen of my cell phone. You know what I mean? So,
oh, okay.
That was a few years ago now, but still. My wife still reminds me of that every now and then.
Yeah, as they are prone to doing.
Yeah. So, I'm going to be making a guest appearance on our friend Richard Reeder's new podcast. So I don't know a lot about it yet, so I can't speak too much of it. But maybe next episode I'll know a little bit more and where you can go to listen to that. Assuming it's out by our next episode. I don't know. But I'm going to be recording that in the next few nights. So I'll have more to discuss at that time on our next episode. But anyway, that's it. That is the best of 2020. Thank you, Kevin, and thank you, Ragnar, for joining me on this long episode. And I want to thank you, dear listener, for taking the time to listen to the Pop Culture Pub podcast. This was the best of 2020, and we will see you again in the not-too-distant future.